AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware on the radio. However, you can listen from anywhere in the USA simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. And you'll also be able to have a rebroadcast of today's show after 2 o'clock this afternoon. It should be up and out. If you'd like to be part of our e-list, you can go on the site, AmericanWorkersRadio.com, and it says join our e-list. And also, you can get the free download, the app for Go for Made in USA, and be able to get our app to listen to American Workers Radio. And when you go to our front page, you'll also know that we're trying very hard to push the American-made label. In fact, our campaign for this year is encouraging America's businesses to highlight on their labels and packaging that their products are made or assembled right here in the United States of America. As you're out shopping, you will see that there are a lot more labels on things, things that you would never expect the American flag or red, white, and blue to be featured on are now promoting, even on the products that are made in America that are food products and clothing, beach chairs. The whole gig is starting to have the American-made movement backing it, you know, in every way possible. I want to let you know a special thank you to our panel members, Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, who will not be with us today because he's on a special assignment. And Larkin Conley, our national small business advocate, is with us, and we're going to have a great conversation. Rich Logis, principal of RJL Technology Integration, is on travel today. He might be up in the air as we speak, but of course, he always listens to the rebroadcast. And our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash, always happy to be with you. I spoke with Curtis Ellis today. As you know, he's the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance. Well, he's on assignment with the Trump administration doing his thing. So we'll be hearing from him in a couple short weeks to know exactly what is going on. As you know, last week, we promoted a very respected subject on our radio broadcast, the restoration of the trades in America's schools. I want to tell you something. That is really a big issue, and I am very pleased to let Larkin know that more and more politicians, those seeking our votes come May, are putting it on their material. I'm looking at one here, and in fact, I might get this gent to come on the radio program. He is promoting the fact that we have to restore the trades in our schools. He's from Northeast Philadelphia, and when we get him on, I'll introduce him nicely. This is great to hear that the politicians are agreeing with us and being in contact with us, because we all know that if students had equal access to the trades in junior and also in senior high school, we would have many millions of skilled workers right here in America, where the businesses and industries not only need quality people, they need skilled people. And to make their products competitive in the stores, they have to have skilled workers. And the training programs that are offered by many of the companies actually cost them a lot of money to get those people ready, when those people can already be trained in junior and senior high school to see exactly where they fit into the entire situation. And one, working in human services, I can say no one can tell me that spending money on welfare programs for working age and able-bodied people is better than spending money on preparing Americans to be part of all levels of the jobs that are needed in America right now. When you hear on the news that we're still having to bring in all these special visa people because we don't have qualified workers, how is that even possible here in the United States of America? And the fact that we lost so many training students and programs in our schools is one of the major causes of the decline of industries in America for the last 30 plus years. But I want to report that last week we had the pleasure of having two representatives of the Orleans Technical College, and that's located at 2770 Red Lion Road in Northeast Philadelphia. I visited there with some groups, and I've taken people there, and they've been very encouraged by what Debbie Bellow, the admissions director, and what Linda Dumphy, an instructor there at Orleans Technical College, are doing. It's a great place, and it is a place that should be helping our people qualify for like a higher up certificate. In other words, they should be going to these trade programs in junior and senior high school and then go for their college year there to Orleans Tech and go to somebody like Debbie Bellow and Linda Dumphy and see exactly what they can do, what they can recommend. We do have some technical schools still in operation, but because of a growing population, there is so few schools available, that's really unfortunate. So I encourage every one of you to check out the Orleans Technical College by going to orleanstech.edu, orleanstech.edu. And I want to tell you, these two ladies, we got a lot of responses. Boy, they enjoyed, Larkin, they really enjoyed the visitors last week. And in fact, they were very impressed that two ladies were there to push the banner of the trades and welcome the people to learn more about their school. And I would like to encourage you again to check them out on the internet at orleanstech.edu. Okay. Well, the trades, of course, as you know, help build America, and we need to restore those trades. And I'm going to talk to some of these political people who, by the way, are on our mailing list, so they know exactly what we're all about. But because we try to keep a balance, non-political, non-sectarian, we haven't wanted to bring these people on. But now that it's getting closer to the election, I'd rather, you know, wait till after the people are primaried in May, and then bring them on after that for the final few months before the November election. In order for us to succeed, as I mention all the time, we, the taxpayers, have to speak up and be heard. Well, first, I'd like to welcome Larkin Conley, who is with us. As you know, he's an unbelievable advocate for small businesses. He's been with SCORE for a long time. He's helped do a lot of positive things. And I have to tell you, SCORE is an operation that is free to people looking to get into a small business. In other words, when you go to SCORE, when you talk to Larkin and some of his peers, you will get ideas so you don't fall before you have a chance to walk. It's like a little kid. You have to crawl before you walk. So please do check out SCORE. You can click on Larkin's picture and the other SCORE link that's on the page. Larkin, how are you doing after this great Easter holiday?
Good morning, Michael. I'm doing great. I'm doing phenomenal. It's another beautiful day in the neighborhood down here in Florida. This is the only time of the year, generally, that I get to brag about the climate in Florida to somebody in the Northeast. I understand you guys were supposed to be getting some snow last Sunday and Monday. I don't know whether that happened or not, but we're in the lap of 72 and no humidity with the bright sunshine. So it's the time of year to be in Florida. And anytime you want to bring the radio program down here and do it from my studios in St. Augustine, You are more than welcome.
We may have to do that, Larkin. I'm getting itchy to get to Florida. I haven't been for a few years.
Yeah, you need to come on down and see the what we call the ancient city, which is St. Augustine, the oldest city in the country.
I'm only worried about those alligators. Rich mentioned he looked out the door of his house and saw an alligator.
Yep, that happens. That happens once in a while. My granddaughters called them dinosaurs, and they probably are the closest thing we have to dinosaurs. There's nothing to worry about, although I will mention that I think it was Sarasota, somewhere over on the west coast of Florida, a guy looked out at his lit swimming pool at 11 like midnight or 1 o'clock to only to see an 11-foot alligator.
Only 11 foot. Oh, well.
By the way, 11 foot is what we call a man-eater. That will dispatch of anybody the size of me all the way down to Henry. We, you know, probably in one bite.
One bite.
listen, last weekend was a gas with the Orleans Tech folks, Debbie and Linda. They really do highlight the need for us to revisit the way we educate our children in this country. There's just absolutely no question of that. And there are so many different directions I could go in. The teachers on strike out in Oklahoma, the second lowest paid teachers in the country. There was a story run the other day about this guy teaching grade school. It's obviously a vocation for him, and he coaches one of the sports there at the school in order to get his pay up to $43,000. Here's a guy with a house full of kids and a wife that has to work, doing something that probably is as helpful to this country as absolutely anything that we could possibly think of. And he's getting a measly $43,000 to teach grade school, and he's been there a while. I mean, the guy's it looked like he was in his late 30s and early 40s, and it's we have just got to revisit what we pay our teachers and how important we think they are to society in this country.
You know, Larkin, you're right. The biggest question that everybody has is why were the trade programs pulled out of the schools in the first place? Nobody understands that. Nobody wants to discuss it. They say, well, it just happened because everything was going computer.
Well, it happened for the same reason that most everything else has happened in this country. It's all about the dollar. Just follow the money. The budgets start to get a little narrow, and what do? They pull programs. We actually, I was told the other day by a young lady that I met who is a retired gym teacher, physical education teacher in the St. John's County, which is where St. Augustine is, St. John's County school system. And I said, phys ed, what a great teaching experience that must have been. And she said, well, sure it is. It's a great experience, but it doesn't exist much anymore. I said, you're kidding. And she said, no. No, physical education has been eliminated in some schools totally, in elementary schools completely, and in secondary and high schools like two or three periods a week. Well, and it's no wonder our kids don't want to go outside and eat a peck of dirt and run around and roll in the grass and get next to nature. I mean, it's been, you know, become almost completely eliminated from our school system. And St. John's
I could use a little dirt right now. I'm hungry for some dirt, Larkin.
Yeah. Well, you know, my grandmother used to say to me when we were hanging around the kitchen and being pests, she'd say, go outside and eat some dirt. And her claim to us was that every child between the ages of 4 and 10 should eat about a peck of dirt. And experience getting dirty and eating dirt and We don't do that anymore. We sanitize their hands when they go outside, and then when they come back in, we sanitize their hands, their face, and we've turned our country into such a bunch of germophobics that we've broken down our resistance to fight all that. It's crazy. The direction that this country is going in on a general basis. I sometimes just shake my head and think, well, really? There are hand pumps at every door at my granddaughter's daycare center where they both go. One's in pre-K and the other's just in the daycare clinic. There's pumps for the kids, and they've got one at the adult level and one at the kids level. And they just encourage them to be constantly putting this disinfectant on their hands and rubbing it. I just don't get it. I really don't get it. And we're setting them up so that they have absolutely no ability whatsoever to fight off any virus.
You know, Larkin, there is one particular elected person seeking to go into re-election that is saying on his literature that he would like to question line by line the costs of education at any individual school. Boy, would I like to see this come about. Because right now, you go to a school board hearing and they say, well, we need 6% more for this particular area. We need 6% more for the library, 6% more for the math. But it never tells you exactly what the money is being used for, how many teachers are being paid, what part of that money that is coming in for the district is being used for paying the bills for the expense of the school, heating, light, cleaning the snow, whatever. It doesn't outline that to the people. They talk in big numbers. Part of that, Larkin, is the problem of the people attending the school board meetings. They don't ask the questions. They ask crazy questions. And you mentioned about physical education. How can you have no physical education? The trades already is an expensive operation. But when it comes to physical education, that's also a way to keep people together, to get them moving, to see what other kids are doing, get them involved in the basketball program, get them involved in track. There's no interest in that.
Just to teach them how to play together.
And
how to play by rules. And instead, we get them out there, and when we do get them to play, then we give everybody a trophy. Everybody wins.
Yeah, you're right.
There is no competition. Listen, we have a guest on the line.
Yes, Michael, we do. We have a special guest, Bruce Wheaton. I'm going to ask you, Bruce, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you, Michael. Hello, Larkin. I trust you're dealing well with the snow up there or the coldness up there in Philadelphia.
We had so much cold this year. I haven't seen it for a while. Now, most of the people, and I hear that it's because of the eclipse that we had. Whenever the eclipse happens, there is this weather pattern that goes on for 3 or 4 months. Well, that happened 3 or 4 months ago. So maybe our weather pattern is now going to get back to normal.
I hope so, for our sake, we need it. I think they should ban eclipses.
I don't know when the next eclipse is, but I'll be looking out for it, because then I'll have to get my skis out again. We did have some crazy wind and weather. The wind this year was unbelievable all over the tri-state area, New Jersey, Delaware. In fact, in New York and Connecticut, all over the East Coast, we were really heavily wind-driven. But
well,
that's how it is.
Like Larkin, I spent 22 years of my life in Philadelphia, almost the same as he did, and probably a little less. But I haven't seen weather like that before. And it's hot down here in Texas. Actually, it's 60 degrees today. But
all right, I'm going to ask you a question. Bruce, what made you move to Texas?
Oh, my gosh, you haven't got enough programs. Just a long journey of You know, I used to be in the furniture business, and I went to California with it. And then when I retired, I met somebody in Texas and moved there rather than took it to California. There you go.
There you go. Very good. That's good. And Larkin, of course, he was looking for better weather. That was his main gig. And he wanted to be close to his kids. He was wanted to be close to his grandkids. And that's very, very important.
Absolutely. It's interesting, you know, Larkin, you know, I'm a school member. I'm district director now here in South Texas, responsible for four or five chapters. And we're doing some very, very interesting things now in working with farms and we've been very, very busy helping small companies in on the coastal regions that were absolutely destroyed by Hurricane Harvey. We've been helping them reconstitute their small businesses and get back on their feet. And it's taking time and effort, and it's coming back, but very slowly.
Very slowly. I've seen that up this way. We've had different hurricanes along our coast, and it took more. People don't understand. It's very easy to knock down, but to rebuild, it's very tough. And that's when I mentioned to support the industries that we have in America, because they're already here and operational. Those that move to get them back and to get the product lines moving, things are not the old lines where people stand, you know, making this stuff now as everything is with robotics and everything else. So people have to understand that skills have changed, and you got to change to have the skills.
Yeah, talking to skills, one of the big problems down here is there aren't enough carpenters. You just can't find them. And I mean, we're, of course, near the Mexican border here. And, the immigration is an issue. But there are about 30% shortage of carpenters right now in this part of Texas. Welders, you name it. You talk about skills being needed in schools. Is absolutely you're spot on that, because they're just not taught. It's a great shame. You know, I was listening to Larkin talking about playgrounds. Changing the subject again, about kids in school and how they're coddled. I was reading an article. I take an English newspaper once a week, and there's a movement now in the UK to put risk back into children's playing. They're taking playgrounds and stripping all the plastic out and putting boulders and rocks and all sorts of things that skin their knees. There's a movement to raise the age or lower the age of wearing helmets when riding a bicycle, because there's a movement to do what Larkin's talking about, is stop coddling kids in school. It's another part of the process of the education system in all over the Western world, I think, that's lacking. Now, I've long thought that sports in American schools are shortchanged by it's all about elitism. If you're a football player, then you're in. If you're not, you don't get to play anything, and it's a shame. Am I right, Larkin?
Yeah, I think you are, Bruce, and I think some of that's changing. I think soccer's a bigger sport. I think kids are still falling asleep playing baseball, unfortunately. But I agree. And you know, I had to laugh the other day. I went over to my daughter's to actually borrow a tool, and I pulled in the driveway, and my granddaughter was on her new birthday bike, two-wheeler with training wheels, and she had knee pads, elbow pads, and a helmet. And So I went to my daughter and I said, "What is all that?"
Yeah, Larkin, I got to tell you, some of this stuff for me is not ringing true. You know, with my kids and stuff in my neighborhood. And first of all, they all have sports, you know, out the wazoo where I live, and their kids into baseball, and there's kids into soccer, and lacrosse is a big thing, and they have physical education in schools, and they all like going outside. I mean, they all play video games when they're not outside, but in my neighborhood, my kids are all about being outside. Like, there's trampolines in every yard in my neighborhood. So, I mean, I don't know.
There's not a universal answer, and I understand that, especially in the burbs where they haven't been, you know, as brutalized with bad budgets. You know, they probably still have PE teachers, I'm sure. And that's not where it hits. I mean, eventually some of the problems reach the burbs as far as budgets are concerned, you know, because I know that your school district where your children are, they went through a really rough patch there with the teachers going on strike because of their pay. Was that not your kid's school district?
That was the next one over.
Close enough. I mean, the problem exists everywhere. You know, the net bottom line is our children aren't as educated and as well-rounded today as they have been in the past. And I'm not blaming any one specific. I'm certainly not blaming a teachers union. I'm not blaming the teachers. I'm not blaming the administrators. If I would point the finger at anybody, I would say, it's the parents' fault for
Absolutely it is, Larkin, because my kids don't ride bikes with helmets on. They don't, and I don't care. My kid goes out with a bike, and he doesn't have a helmet on. I don't care. That's what I did. And it does come down to the parents, because some of the rules of the school and stuff, I just don't buy into it. So I just raise my kids the way I think they should be raised, and you know, I don't really bother with any of that.
Yeah, they've overprotected too many people. I didn't have helmets. Larkin didn't have helmets. Probably Mark didn't have helmets. We really knew how to do it on the fields and bike ride. God, I was a great bike rider. I had a motorcycle. You name it. We all had our day, and we learned to be more outdoorsy as a result of it.
I used to roller skate like crazy. I didn't wear knee pads, helmets, or anything else like that. Yes, I scuffed my knees often, but I mean, you'd think that they think that the kids aren't going to survive unless they have all these pads and elbow pads, and I mean, it almost looks ridiculous. I mean, even and Larkin will, his kids and my kids used to play. They didn't have helmets and knee pads when they skateboarded and roller skated and rode their bikes around the neighborhoods. Did they like it?
Well, I mean, if everybody's wearing a helmet, how are you going to hit your best friend in the head with a baseball bat when he makes you mad? The only guy in my neighborhood that wore a helmet is still running from probably three guys in my neighborhood who are trying to chase him down and beat him up.
You know who would be hurt, of course, is the people that manufacture helmets.
talking about the people being hurt with those helmets, a lot of those helmets are foreign made. Yesterday I was asked by a newspaper reporter, and I'll have to look today if I was quoted or not. He asked me about the Amazon issue. And that was, and he was kind of silent when I gave my response. I said to him, well, I'll tell you this, as someone involved in the American-made movement, I said, I understand that this should have been addressed a long time ago. And he said, why? I said, because most of the items in the shipping boxes are foreign-made products. So why are we allowing Amazon a $1.50 discount for those particular items? I said, and by the way, Amazon is shipping out the same items that you and I can buy at your local or your department stores. It's mostly foreign made. So who's getting the benefit of the $1.50 discount on the postal rates per box from Amazon? The only people who are freaking out about it are the box companies, because they want to sell boxes to Amazon. The foreign lobbyists are furious because it'll cost a little more to move their products in the boxes to the people. And the foreign merchandisers are the main people doing the complaining. Quite frankly, I would like to see the entire thing outlined. I wish the people in Washington would outline exactly what their plan is to make equality for all American businesses the same as it is for the foreign manufacturers who are now flooding our stores. Think about it. The items in the boxes from Amazon are 90%, 85% foreign made. Let's try to reverse that.
The trouble is, Michael, you don't do, I don't know what, $600 billion worth of business a year because people don't want you to do what you're doing. Well, you know, if the people don't want to do it, Michael, they won't buy, but they do buy.
They do buy they because buy of because, convenience. But,
well, of course.
But Bruce,
well,
if
what do you
if,
expect them to do?
But Bruce, if half of those products in that Amazon box were American made, boy, we'd
they'd
have
be
a,
twice the price.
We'd have the boot. Well, but if
and
you
nobody would buy them.
But if
and
you
been,
made a competitive product, you could sell it. I do a lot of shopping specifically to see what the prices are for American-made stuff. I've gone to a particular chain, a drugstore chain, to buy a product. Then I went into a dollar store to see what that same product was going to be. And you know what the same product is? Pennies more. So when we're talking about it's going to be so much money, it's not. Because the people
those people can go on Amazon as well and sell their products.
Absolutely. But the problem is this. So many of our industries were gobbled up, mainly because they were attracted out of America. We have to attract them back and put some balance back into what's available. I love Amazon. God bless them. But I wish they had 50% American made on all of their sales items.
Well, it would be nice, and if the 50% were priced that the American people wanted to buy, then that's free trade and free enterprise, and I'm all for that. But
Bruce, I want to tell you this. You're right. But we have to get our American businessmen to have a level of competition. How do we know that they can't make those products at a competitive price, save on the shipping, the foreign shipping to America, by having them right here in the USA made? It's got to be some way to balance this thing out. It's just never been discussed. We're shaking up everything now. We've been shaking it up for a few years, but we have a long way to go.
We've talked I'm involved in the outdoor furniture business on a consultancy basis now, and I've got a client in Chicago who imports umbrellas. He's tried time and time again to get U.S. manufacturers of umbrellas, and they're double the price, and people just don't buy them. I mean, he's on every e-commerce site you can name, and they all come up with products that are a quarter of the price of him. They're not good products, but they buy them. It's all about price.
Now, I have a question, Bruce. What you said is absolutely correct. I'm going to ask you something. The guy who's selling the umbrellas, would it be possible now that he's getting a corporate tax reduction? The people are getting a little more in their paychecks, so he doesn't have to be overly concerned about more money being spent by the company in weekly salary. Is there a way to help that company bring down that umbrella price so it could be more competitive? The reason I'm saying it is I want a choice. If I see a yellow umbrella and I see a black umbrella, I want to have the choice to say, I'll take this one no matter what the cost is because it's made in America. I want that choice. Right now, I don't have that choice.
Let me speak to the culprit in this case that I don't think we've addressed. You claim, and rightfully so, that a competitive widget on the shelf in an Ace Hardware store is pennies, anything acceptable up to maybe 5-6% more expensive than the imported product. Well, here's the culprit. The culprit isn't China. And the culprit isn't our trade sector. The culprit is the big box dealer that has decided that he's bought something cheaper and he's not going to share that cheaper price. You look at that product that he's imported and it's only 8% cheaper. I'm telling you, he's making a margin on that product that he would never give up.
Yeah, you're right. There's no question that that's true. But these big box people, you know, they don't walk around with, you know, pen and pencil looking at prices. It's all done by algorithms, Larkin.
Guys, I want to bring something up. I think you'll like this because I've been to a store, it was maybe a month ago. It was a cold, windy day. I stopped in and I talked to the man. There was very few people out because of the weather. And we spoke at length, and I said to him, would you be kind enough to show me your merchandise list? He says, well, it's all computerized. You come in my room, and I'll show it to you. Well, guys and audience, I want you to know there was virtually nothing on that list for him to buy that was made in America. Nothing. It was all from foreign, the King John, trading company, the China trading company. It's everything that on their list. It's our American merchandisers who have also put the knife in the American business people featuring the products. That store did not have access to the American products because it's not on their buy list.
So was this a chain store?
Yes, it was. By the way, I went to an Ace Hardware. We were having a festival the other day, and I went to Ace Hardware. I had to pick up some masking tape. So I passed the dollar store first. I went into the dollar store, and the masking tape was $1, foreign made, and it had half of the amount of tape on it. People, be careful when you go shopping. It had half of the amount of masking tape. Well, I needed more masking tape than that. So I went down the road on Frankfurt Avenue, and I stopped at the Ace Hardware. I went in, and there was the thing made in America. Yes, it cost me $1 and a half more. However, I probably got 60% more tape on the roll. So they're giving you look at the stuff in these dollar stores, they're giving you something at a cheaper price, but really take a good look at what's on the roll. You go check it out. I mean, people listen to this broadcast, go out and say, yeah, I tried it, I saw it myself. But the biggest thing is the importers, the buy people are not going out to the stores with a buy list, merchandiser list that offers American made. If they did, the storekeepers are ready, able, and willing, mostly, to bring in the American-made stuff, even if it costs a little more. Because Larkin and Bruce and everyone else, if you have a store and you're listening right now, there's nothing more embarrassing than a customer walking in the door and they say, do you have this American-made? And they say, no. So I am the kind of person, I'll walk out the door and see if I can find it elsewhere. Masking tape, I can't believe it has to be foreign made. And the cost was not that much difference.
But, you know, there's nothing to stop people manufacturing masking tape here.
They do make it here.
They've got the right to go and lobby Walmart and all other stores to buy their product. And it's got to be competitive.
Well, you're right. And the way Walmart...
You know, I'm not paying double the amount for masking tape just because it's...
Walmart works on enormous quantities. You're very right. And if they can get 2 cents off on any product, they'll put that product over the next one.
And you only know that as well as I do if you've ever sold to Walmart. And I did.
Yeah, I
didn't actually sell to Walmart. I sold to Sam's Club, but it's one and the same, just on a different side of town. But I have a tendency to agree with Bruce. These buyers are going to put on the shelves what's going to sell. They're not going to, they can't, and they won't spoon feed the American public by running advertisements on television that say, you, before you buy that tape, take a look and make sure you're getting the right quantity. I mean, that's not America. That's not what we do.
That's right. We've become lazy. I 1,000% agree.
Well, it's not lazy as much as it is.
Convenience. Grab it and go.
My lovely wife explains. It's essentially the dumbing of America.
Grab it and go. Let me just add a further thing to and how complicated this all is. And I'll go back to my umbrella guy in New York, in Chicago. He does something that many umbrella people don't. He gets all his fabrics now from made in the USA. They're high quality fabrics. It adds about $100 to the umbrella, and we sell them. But when you go up and look for half umbrella, which is our product on the web, and ask for it, you get 8 cheapy Chinese umbrellas that are like $59, $69. They don't last a week. Ours are up in the $200 range. So it doesn't stop us competing. It doesn't stop us from producing a good product. But the frames we get made in China and the fabrics are homegrown, and they're much, much better fabrics. And a lot of people buy because they want their umbrella to last 2 or 3 years out there.
Now, Bruce, what size is that umbrella?
It's 9 foot and 7.5 foot. They're 2 sizes.
Oh, so they're like beach umbrellas?
No, they're basically balcony umbrellas. They're half umbrellas.
Okay, so for that price, I could see somebody, if they want to support for their balcony, that's going to last a long time.
Sure.
Those that open and close. Oh, yeah, that I can see. It's the smaller stuff, and you know,
it's up to marketing to promote a product that's better made and better and of higher quality. You can always sell that, and that's what we should be going for in this country.
Yes,
I mean, we've been dealing with cheap Asian made products since, you know, we used to slam everything that was made in Japan back in the 50s and 60s. I mean, it's not going to stop. But, making quality products and I counsel people who want to make products and I stress that if you're going to make a product and you're worried about overseas competition, make it something that will compete on quality and service if it's a service-involved product. And that's how we're going to get there. To me, don't you agree, Larkin?
Yes, I don't think there's any question that attacking this on virtually nothing but price,
is a losing battle.
Or worse, as far as I'm concerned, attacking it for national reasons is just not going to work. I mean, we live in a world economy. And more so now than ever before. And just
and
saying,
gonna be
well, ask for American because you should be buying American. No, you shouldn't be buying American, not necessarily. And I understand how this evolves and revolves around, you buy my product, I'll buy your product. We scratch each other's backs. We build a strong economy. And I understand all that. But at this point, we've got to learn how to compete. I don't think we're going to be able to turn that corner just for patriotic reasons.
Couldn't agree more.
I agree. I agree with that. And that's why I say
you can't legislate it either.
No, you can't legislate it, and you have to get the people in our industries to accept the fact that they have to compete. What happened in recent years, and I can see by all the merchandisers list, is that people just didn't have it available to them. And that's it. You go out to buy Christmas decorations, 90% of it is foreign made. Why is that? Do they celebrate Christmas in China? What happened to the Christmas manufacturers who did all those products that were here in America for many years and left 15, 20 years ago to go foreign? Why is that?
Because in order to develop that product, they had to pay a representative salary to their employees. Listen, Bruce is going to tell you, 90% of the time, the most expensive line item on the cost of goods sold for anything that you manufacture or the Chinese or anybody else manufactures is the labor. And if you're paying them $0.04 an hour, how do we compete with that? How do you compete with $0.04 an hour?
Well, that's
$0.04 an hour. But I mean, here's what happens is that the Chinese economy now has exploded to such a point that instead of being compared to an American worker who gets like $20 an hour, they used to get $8 an hour. They're getting $14 an hour now to an American's $25. I mean, yeah, there are lower wage workers who get $5 and $6, but the days of cents an hour in China are disappearing. There are casual furniture companies now. And this will make you mad, Michael, is that they used to get their stuff from China. Now they're heading for India. They're heading for Indonesia. They're heading for Thailand, anywhere else where they can make it cheaper because of the labor. And they're not heading home.
Now,
no question, and every evolving economy is India. It's a different problem. It's the caste system. You either have or you don't. There is no middle class in India. And that's where the disparity in wages in large part comes from in India. But any of these other evolving nations, that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to hit the marketplace with low wages and manufacture stuff that in many cases, the manufacturer of that item is being sponsored by one of our friends, one of the nations. I mean, don't think for a second that Walmart doesn't own portions of factories and has employees over in factories in Indonesia and in the Philippines. And, they own part of that factory.
Right.
Absolutely. And by the way, Larkin, it's the same thing with companies that sound so American, yet their investors are a lot of foreigners, too. And the reason foreign investors invest so heavily in those corporations is so they have the access to the American market to put their products in. That's as blunt as it can be said. They invest so they can distribute at their discretion, period. And we've allowed that to happen. Not that we have allowed it to happen as the customer, but the American leader just said, well, it's the way the new world and this and that. And as Curtis says, we've opened the doors to many countries, hoping that they would come up, grow and become friendly to America and all. That all has now come back to haunt us. The fact that our industries are, cut to such a low degree, the fact that there is no trades in 95% of America's schools, which at one time I understand that 50% of America's schools has had trade programs, especially like in the bigger cities. You had, because you had so many industries, those industries at one time were crying for those skilled workers. So the schools gave what they wanted. Today, those products are coming foreign made, so the schools have nothing to give, because there are few manufacturers in America asking for the young skilled workers coming out of our grade schools, our high schools, and our colleges.
And now that's turned around to a point that I read an article the other day in one of the major magazines where a major manufacturer in the Midwest was quoted as saying, my biggest problem is finding people who are educated or talented enough in a specific trade that they would be interested in working for me. I'm paying competitive wages. This guy's paying $20, $30 an hour to skilled employees. But he said, my biggest problem right now is I can't get any of them to pass the drug test.
Oh, that's very true. And there was an article, I think I mentioned it about 2 months ago. In fact, I was going to, welcome this gentleman who owned the aluminum window company to come on. The biggest problem that he has is the same thing. People don't know how to use the ruler, and the drug test is also a problem. So he's saying in his article in the paper, you can't be standing at a machine and have a problem. You can't be at a machine if you don't know how to use a ruler. And educating the people on the spot by the company is also very costly. So it's a double-edged sword now that we're up against. The school screwed us. He employs 300 people. And they make aluminum storm doors, screen doors, the whole deal.
How many people do you know that can use a slide rule these days?
Well, this is a problem. How can you graduate high school without knowing these kinds of things? This is the problem.
Come on.
That was the only calculator I had when I went to work, was a slide rule.
That's right.
In my top pocket.
That slide rule's been replaced by a pocket computer. My cell phone will do your slide rule.
Should have skill to operate it.
Well, I've seen now recently going out different places, people don't even use ruler. They have this little electronic device made in China.
Yeah, that's right.
And it measures the room, the angle of the room. And when they go out shopping for something, they just take this thing and measure it up with the electronic beam. How did we get to this point where our kids... Now, the person using that beam was somebody who doesn't know how to use a ruler and doesn't have one of those slide measuring tapes. So they went out and bought this electronic device to give them an idea how to measure the room.
Listen, you have to keep up with technology. And I don't have any problem with that. I'm not chastising them for that. But when you keep on asking me why, I keep on trying to give you the same answer, and that is that our American politicians, under the guise of political donations for re-election, allowed foreign countries to import or export into our country products that were made, built, assembled, boxed, and sent over here by people who were paid virtually nothing to do the work.
Right.
We have the Fair Labor Standards Act. We have all this, that, and the other thing. We want to curse our sovereignty and let however many people are now marching through the fields of Mexico into this country, when in fact the best thing we could have done for the world and for the world economy would have said, we are not going to participate in any economy that treats their people like this. And we've had so many politicians who've been so uppity about other nations. But when it comes to what they pay their people and how they treat their people, they turn their back to it.
Those people, that's right. Those people in politics didn't care because they were getting the donations from the foreign investors and the foreign lobbyists. This particular state representative, I just want to take without mentioning his name. This gentleman believes every child deserves a chance to pursue the career of their choice. He will fight to increase funding for the career technical education system in our schools. He believes that our schools need to step up to ensure their excellent career training programs are once again available. Now, this is a guy, I got to talk to him soon. He's been in contact with many of the people, and I'm going to have to get him maybe to come on. Hopefully, he'll make it through the primary, and we'll be able to have him on the broadcast because now the political people are starting to see the light. Unless we get those trades back into the schools, unless we get the kids learning to how to use rulers, balance checkbooks, we are not going to change for the better. The people who listen to broadcasts like this, and I want to compliment as we close off our broadcast today, the many newspapers, the internet sites, the radio programs, the television broadcasters, the individuals and the organizations that are all promoting the Buy American Made campaign like I have never seen before. The biggest problem that comes about as a result of all of us promoting the Buy American Made campaign, the people ask, like that woman Clara did some years ago, where are the American-made products? With that, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Bruce and Larkin for being part of our broadcast today. Thank you, Henry, also for joining in. It was a pleasure.
Larkin, this one's for you.
Talk to you soon.
Talk to you guys soon. My very best. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, I wish you and yours the very best. Barbara will be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. here on 860. Have a great one, and we're looking for a great spring weather to happen one day soon.